We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, driven by Geico. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. That fine gentleman over there, as always, is my affable co-host, Dan Rubenstein, for one more show. He is still in the tropics of sunny Southern California. Sir.
Yeah.
How goes the good life?
Oh, the good life is good. Last night, we were driving around all day yesterday. We saw a couple friends. We got food. I had a burger that I had never had that I've heard good things about. And I'm once again sitting at a card table with a camera stacked atop old textbooks and yearbooks, a laptop in front of me, a mixer beside me. And I have like the feeling like I'm in an FBI truck, right? That I'm just like huddled in on a sort of mission that I'm listening in. Like it has like a, you know, Steve's Flowers on the side of the truck that I'm just here on a stakeout talking about, I don't know, Jermaine Burton or Fedarian Mathis or any of these. Like, it's just a complete joy to put this together and tear it apart and get back to real audio video life. So I'm good, Ty. Come on. I can't complain. How are you?
Today, Wednesday, when most people are listening to this show, is 8 years to the day that you and I and some friends recorded our infamous show in your parents' jacuzzi.
Oh, I remember that. You rigged up the outer edge of our jacuzzi, my family's jacuzzi in the backyard, in a scary efficient way. I think you had four mics.
We had four mics.
At 12, yeah. 6, 3, and 9 o'clock. And you just were capturing things. Like, maybe it was binaural at that. I don't know what was happening. You did a great job with that.
Have you introduced the Solid Offspring yet to the jacuzzi?
So funny you should mention that, as we are, I promise you, going to preview Alabama and Georgia in an important, serious, and unserious way. Yes. And they're quite fond because there's a couple of rocks. Well, the first guy is. The second guy hasn't been in yet, maybe today. Of like jumping off, there's a kind of a rock waterfall. It's a very small little thing. Jumping off and into the water and splashing around. So yeah, they're big fans of the jacuzzi.
Well, welcome back, one and all, if you are listening for the first time or the 100th time. Please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you get all of our new episodes. If you like the show, please don't hesitate to rate or review, really wherever it will let you, but specifically on Apple and Spotify is where it helps the most. You can always check out our Patreon community over at verballers.com. We have all sorts of fun stuff planned for the off season that we'll be discussing in a matter of days now, being so the off season is getting awfully big in the window. And last but certainly not least, solidgiveaway.com. You only have mere days until this current iteration of our contest expires. That, of course, being for a signed Desmond Howard mini helmet. SolidGiveaway.com is where you can go to find out the details on how you can enter to win. It's free. We just need a few quick steps for you to follow. And yeah, we'll throw your hat in the ring.
I recommend it, Ty. I think you nailed it.
So on today's show, as you might have guessed from the title, we are previewing the college football playoff national championship game between Alabama and the Georgia Bulldogs. This is a rematch from the SEC title game that was played about a month or so ago. You may recall that Alabama won that game by a 41-24 score.
Yes.
But we're not just going to preview it, are we?
No, absolutely not. That would be an 11-minute show. No, we are going to go deep and we're going to go shallow, Ty. Maybe it's the jacuzzi theme, Ty. Maybe we're going to, in the moment, pivot from going from an overthink, underthink express theme to what bubbles up, Ty. What's the chlorine that cleanses the issues that Georgia's faced in mistake-prone stretches? Are we doing a jacuzzi theme?
We had planned a train theme.
I know. Oh, there it is. That's the one we're referencing.
Not that train.
Shout out Pat Monahan.
But we've been going with the overthink and underthink express all year.
Well, maybe there is a train car that is the jacuzzi car. And that's some highlight of the game matchup of some kind. Ty, we're stretching here. We're stretching.
You workshop that, okay? We'll come back to
okay,
that.
I will. Okay. That'll be an auxiliary theme.
An auxiliary theme. So here is where things stand. Alabama's 13-1. They won the SEC title game. They obviously won their playoff matchup with Cincinnati by a 27-6 runaway train type of score.
Yeah.
They are currently a 3-point underdog against the Georgia Bulldogs, a team that they beat by 17 in their first matchup again about a month or so ago. Georgia is 13-1. They are favored again in this matchup. They won their playoff game against the Michigan Wolverines by a 34-11 margin. Your over-under in this game is 52 points. So here's what I did. I went back through. I watched both of the playoff games again. I watched the Alabama-Georgia game again. I took copious notes on things that jumped out to me.
Look at you.
Things that I think moving forward now into this contest. Where do you think the best place is for us to start?
I mean, it's your call, because right now you are the conductor here. I think it's best to start at, let's start at the beginning. I think let's just talk about what you have gleaned, what I have gleaned from both of their seasons and through the playoff matchups for sure. But big picture, like, what is your opinion of the 2021-2022 Alabama Crimson Tide? Like, do you have, like, things that are, like, what is your foundational thinking for Alabama going into this game and however you're going to pick and analyze this game?
Well, we can start way back at the very, very beginning.
Yeah.
Because at the very, very beginning of the year, maybe for the first time ever, I actually came pretty damn close to picking the correct national champion. Everybody tries to be a little bit different, right? Nobody wants to pick Alabama or Clemson every year. So you're trying to mix it up a little bit. And I did. I said Georgia. At the beginning of the year, you recall, I was very high on Georgia.
Correct.
And I'm still high on Georgia. But I think the main reason why I was so gung-ho on the Bulldogs is because there was a lot we didn't know about Alabama. Namely at quarterback, right? Bryce Young coming in. He's going to get the start. We haven't seen him before. He's a freshman. Obviously, like, there's a lot that needs to happen before Alabama can get back into this title game. Being so, they had Mac Jones, who had a historic year in his own right.
Yeah, record setting. Yep.
Walking out the door, first round pick, now the starter for the New England Patriots. So that uncertainty around the quarterback position, I think, dictated a lot of our early commentary around each of these teams, really around all of college football. That was one of the themes that we zeroed in on. This Alabama team is different. It is fundamentally different. It is a little bit more flawed than I think we've seen in Alabama teams past. They don't quite have the running game that they've had in the past. Like we saw, they're able to clearly play that game. They did so against Cincinnati, but we've been talking a lot more about Bryce Young and what he does and Jameson Williams and John Metchie before he got hurt and what they do on that side of things. Brian Robinson has been more of a complimentary piece that they can use. He's a big bruising back when they want to, but he's not Najee Harris, right? It's just
right,
a different setup this time around. I think the thing that I carry with me the most into this contest and really through the SEC title game and now through the playoff with regard to Alabama is the fact that it feels like they're getting better, right? We had this game back second week of October, I think, against Texas A&M that they lost 41-38. To this day, I still don't fully understand how that happened.
Yeah.
I have not found a whole lot of folks out there in college football media who can accurately explain how that went down, but it did. And since then, Alabama has sort of been in that zombie Bama mode, maybe with the exception of the Auburn game, which was too close for comfort. Jameson Williams was out. He had been ejected for targeting on a special teams play. But really, outside of that game, it's felt to me like this Bama team has gotten better. They've improved. And then with what we saw in the SEC title game, certainly with what we saw them do against Cincinnati, it's apparent to me now that this is a much more complete product. They can play so many different ways. They can beat you so many different ways that the looming question for me of what does Georgia do differently to maybe get one up on Bama? What can Georgia do now with the benefit of 60 minutes of tape that will change the equation? Alabama is such a complete product that I still don't have an answer for that. So not to give away the game too much, but sure. If I'm really underthink expressing this, the operative question is what will Georgia do differently? What can they do differently to change the game? In all of the film study that I've done, for whatever that's worth, and all of the stats and reading that I've done and looked over, I still have yet to find that one silver bullet solution.
All right. I think I largely agree with you, though I differ on some points and some opinions, but I think I will arrive at the same place just in how I look back at the 2021-22 Alabama season. You're right in a lot of that. It was there more question marks and a different feeling Alabama team almost all year long. They don't try to understand the Texas A&M game. Texas A&M won that game because a number of boxes were ticked and they were good enough to take advantage, you know, be it the weird special teams plays that did go both ways, or the play at the end from Zach Calzada, or the weird stretches. And those stretches did happen to Alabama in more games than just the A&M game. But the slow starts, the turnovers, the punts, the missed field goals, things like that. Alabama seemed to be, to my eyes, more prone to weird, sluggish first half stretches. It happened against LSU. It happened against Auburn, for sure happened against Auburn, where they just traded punts for the opening, however long of that game. So Alabama is a team that didn't have the depth of skill position players, proven skill guys that they've had these past few years, working in a third starting quarterback in 3 years, which is different, right? Mac Jones started the end of the season when Tua got hurt. But for the most part, they've had a decent amount of continuity, you know, during Jalen Hurts' time and then Tua's time. And then, you know, Mac Jones was obviously a special quarterback. And as far as I can tell, looks very promising as an NFL quarterback. So not a flash in the pan by any stretch. So that coupled with the new coaches, with the loss of those receivers, with, you know, a new look offensive line by and large, it's understandable that Alabama was due to, even if they were going to continue winning, sort of difficulties on offense. Again, still winning, but difficulties, those long stretches. Like if you look at what they were able to do on the ground against LSU, it was nothing. It was absolutely nothing. LSU sold out and tried to make Bryce Young beat them. Eventually, they were able to hold on and win that game because Bryce Young is better than Max Johnson. And I believe Stetson Bennett is too, by the way. And the Auburn game is something similar as well, that they were just prone to those stretches. Auburn's defense wasn't incredible this year, but it didn't take an incredible defense. It just took Alabama making mistakes and the offensive line not looking like previous offensive lines have looked like, hanging on to win, for sure. But this is an Alabama team, even if you believe that they've improved, that even, you know, going into the Georgia game, something clicked along the offensive line and everybody responded. And obviously, John Metchie gets hurt in that game. But if you believe that something clicked in Bill O'Brien and the offense's head during that Georgia game, especially that second half, and it carried over to whatever extent against Cincinnati, then yeah, you can. I think it's reasonable to say Alabama has found itself in a better place, especially on offense, since, you know, even November. But Alabama defensively is also kind of interesting. The linebackers are quite strong. The defensive line, even as beat up as they were at some points during the season, features the best pass rusher in the world. And now heading into this game, the last I saw was that they're down their two starting corners right? That Josh Jacobs is out for the season. He had surgery, and Jalen Armour Davis was on the sideline but didn't play against Cincinnati. So what do we fully believe the 360-degree Alabama experience is going into Georgia? I think I'm with you. I think they're improved. I think they're dangerous. And I think situationally, I don't know how you come away anything but impressed with an Alabama team winning heading into a national championship game. So I'm with you. But at the same time, I don't know how the inherent flaws and situations get fixed against this Georgia defense. It might not need to be. They can still win with these flaws, for sure. But it's an interesting experience, I think, looking at the Alabama season, because it's been sort of all over the place and still ended with a Heisman-winning quarterback.
Still ended with a Heisman-winning quarterback.
Yeah.
We'll come back to that a couple times.
Yeah.
But let's go over to Georgia for a second. The Georgia case is also, I think, quite interesting because, again, I've said here already on this show many times throughout the course of the year, the Georgia was my team. I was all in on the dogs going into the year. And again, you think of how narrative has changed. Again, if we zero in on the quarterback, I was all in on JT Daniels because way back when JT Daniels started the last four games of the 2020 season and the offense changed, the offense got better, it got more vertical. When they brought him over from USC, that was something that they wanted to do. They wanted to play more of a vertical style game.
Right.
He couldn't get on the field. And so it was back
to... Well, he did, and then couldn't stay,
Couldn't stay on the field, sure.
Yeah.
It was Stetson Bennett before you knew it. And I think if we want to ride on the underthink express, again, with regard to Georgia, we need to point out that Stetson Bennett has also gotten better. He has also gotten a lot better. I went back, I watched that Alabama game, and granted, he threw two interceptions. Granted, he was under duress. And granted, he maybe did not have the athletes in space that could contend with the Alabama secondary or the Alabama front seven. We could talk about that as well. But I thought, by and large, he played a pretty good game. And then we saw what he did against Michigan, and he played a hell of a game. 20 for 30, over 300 yards, three touchdowns, very efficient with the football, can run if he has to. And it's clear to me that they have found a new dimension to his game as well. He's a lot more confident this time around than he was certainly in 2020, and maybe even more so than he was just a month ago. Like, I really saw something in that Michigan game that made me feel good about what he has to offer. Georgia, for my money, has been the best team all year.
Sure.
Like, nobody's been anywhere close to that level of production this year.
No.
I think it's probably the most obvious thing in the world, underthink express, that the defense is ridiculous. We saw what they did against Michigan. But we should also talk about the offense, because lost, I think, in the shuffle and the glow and the shine of how good the Georgia defense has been a really efficient offense. It wasn't the number one offense in college football, but it was pretty damn near the most efficient in college football. They just did everything they had to very, very well, very, very efficiently. And that's why they're blowing teams out all year, even SEC competition. We saw it against the Michigan Wolverines in that playoff game. Like, this did not at all look like an offense that can't contend with the best defenses in college football. And I'm getting a little tired of hearing it. Like, I think I'm probably guilty of saying, well, what's Georgia going to do against a really good defense like Michigan? Well, we saw what they did. They blew them out of the water. And so there's no reason to think against an Alabama or really anybody in college football that the offense is some sort of flash in the pan or a fluke that's not going to be able to carry its own water. Like, they can definitely do the job if they can play their brand of football. That's a big if.
Yeah.
I really feel like this team, if a few things go their way, if they can figure out a way to stop Bryce Young, which no one has, then maybe we're talking about a different scenario. I don't believe that, but this is definitely a team that's good enough to beat Alabama if four things go their way this time around.
Yeah, I think you nailed pretty much everything, and you were very high on Georgia, especially with what they were offering up front on defense. And that front seven, eight, six, however they're lined up, is just stupid good and stupid all over the place and, you know, stupid lethal, to say the stupid triumvirate. Yeah, they were dominant. They left no doubt. Other than that opening game against Clemson, which I believe was a JT Daniels game, there was nothing close leading up to the Alabama game. those games were over relatively soon, or at least even if it was like 17-10 or whatever at 14-7 at a certain point, already had the feeling of inevitability. And that's just how good Georgia's defense is. And that's why they're so deep and those guys are all going to the NFL, whatever. They've done a sensational job on that side of the ball. And you're right about the offense, that it was much more efficient than explosive. And I don't know if that was a product of having George Pickens out all year injured and having good but not great receivers and have different guys step up at different times. Ladd McConkey, Jermaine Burton, guys like that. Obviously, Brock Bowers is among, if not the best tight end in the country. You know, he, Michael Mayer, I don't know what the list exactly looks like.
But so pause right there. Pause right there for a second, right?
Yeah.
Let's take a ride on the Overthink Express if we
can. Let's. Okay.
All right. Because we just spent 10 minutes singing the praises of both these teams.
Sure.
Let's talk about where the weaknesses are.
You want to nitpick. Yeah.
I want to nitpick. I want to overthink it. And let's keep it there with Georgia. Because if you go through and look at what this team did in the passing game, Brock Bowers was far and away their primary target during the regular season.
Sure.
Brock Bowers caught most of what was thrown his way, 73% of it, 791 yards during the regular season, 16.8 per catch. There are other names here, but the one narrative that I think I keep hearing, and I know you have heard it as well, is that Georgia does not have that true Jameson Williams type out wide that can really make a defense worry about getting its top blown off or somebody in space who's going to be problematic. Right. Like Ladd McConkey did a little bit of that in the SEC title game, and we saw him do some of that in the playoff game as well. Ladd McConkey is not Jameson Williams. So
no.
If I'm overthinking Georgia with what I've seen this year, and I could probably use this to build a case against them in the title game, I would say that Alabama, with its secondary, even down a few guys, is looking across the field and saying, they're good, but they're not athletic enough to put us in compromising situations to make us change our defense too much. That makes sense?
Yeah. Oh, it makes total sense. And I think more their offense is seasoned with an ability to generate explosive plays, chunk plays, because they were able to take shots successfully, even as recently, you know, against Michigan with James Cook. You know, Jermaine Burton had the big catch, and George Pickens had a big catch against Alabama. I think it was like 37, 39 yards, something like that, down the sideline. But the thing, just big picture, as we nitpick Georgia, because it's definitely a nitpick because this was a terrific offense, is when you look at the teams who both arrive in and win national championship games in the modern era, both those Alabama teams and teams that beat Alabama or compete with Alabama, it's that receiving core is something that there's just in common. We call them winter wonders, those gravitational receivers that you can count on to be dangerous, whether it's going back to those Clemson teams with Mike Williams or Tavis Scott, or the more recent ones with Amari Rodgers and Justin Ross and T. Higgins, guys like that. And then obviously the LSU team was stacked. The Alabama teams were stacked, as we all know, you know, Henry Ruggs and Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle, all those guys. So the question remains is, if we are believers in both of these defenses, does it come down to which team is Jameson Williams on, right? Does it come down, and that was a difference in this SEC championship game, where it's like when you are thinking about how your defense gravitates to or away from the offense, who's at the top of your worry list? And Brock Bowers got his in the SEC championship game. Ultimately, it didn't make a difference.
Right, right.
What is, you know, in a matchup with teams as deep and as talented and as well coached, what is your plans D, E, and F, right? What are plans D, E, and F? What, you know, when things go awry, when, okay, you're up 14-0, you're up 10-0, you're up 24-20, or whatever Georgia was up last year in this matchup, what is your out pitch? What is, you know, what is your eighth best secret that you have brought into this game for what you're going to do to counter what the other team is doing? And we saw in both of those second halves early on where Alabama became sort of hip to what Georgia was trying to do. And that's when the interceptions came. That's when the three and outs came. That's when the mistakes came, because for whatever reason, that eighth best secret, that, you know, the triple Excelsior, like we like to talk about sometimes, isn't always there. And when that's not there and you don't have the completely worrisome receivers, that's when things can go poorly. And I don't know if that's just happenstance, because Georgia was in a position to win the national championship game without those guys, what, 4 years ago?
Yeah,
something like that.
Right.
Like, they had Mecole Hardman. They had good dudes. They had, you know, Wims. They had guys on that team. But it was Jake Fromm with a receiving core who was merely good, not great. They had the running backs that were worrisome and absolute killers, and Nick Chubb and Sony Michel and DeAndre Swift. But in this scenario, when we see where the game has come, is that a meaningful difference? And Alabama doesn't have the stable, but they've got the dude.
Right.
So I just wonder, Ty. I don't know what you think about that kind of thing.
No, I think you're right. And if we flip it around and if we talk about Alabama, right, if we are specifically talking about this matchup, John Metchie's out. Now, John Metchie was out for the second half of the first game. And John Metchie was out for all of the Cincinnati game. Didn't really matter in either of those cases. But it holds that John Metchie led the team in targets. He had 130 targets this year. He had over 1,100 yards. This is a guy who came pretty close to 100 catches in a college offense. So clearly John Metchie was an important part of this offense. I'm not going to sit here and say that without him on the field, it solves the underlying problems for Georgia's defense. The underlying problem is Bryce Young. And not having John Metchie still does not solve that problem. But it is one fewer weapon to worry about. And I do wonder if there is something now that Georgia and Kirby Smart and Dan Lanning, if he's still got any part to play in the story, if there's something that they can now do a little bit differently to devote more resources to stopping Bryce Young and not stopping both John Metchie and Jameson Williams, because they no longer have to.
Right.
I'm very interested to see, and I'm not smart enough as an X's and O's scheme guy to know how they could redevote some of their resources otherwise, but that is an interesting wrinkle.
Well, it's what they do with safeties, right? It's how often are you keeping safeties high? How much attention do you care to give to? I mean, Ja'Cory Brooks scored a terrific touchdown with Jameson Williams as a decoy against Cincinnati, if memory serves. It was only a few days ago, but I am an old at this point. So there are guys, right? We may not know their names or associate their names with danger quite yet. They've recruited super duper well. And, you know, Slade Bolden scores a touchdown against Cincinnati, certainly more of a possession type receiver than a like, oh crap, where is he on every play type receiver.
Exactly.
But we've seen guys like that be lethal against, you know, Hunter Renfro, like guys underneath, Clyde Edwards-Alaire out of the backfield, where they're not necessarily killers 57 yards down the field. And I don't remember if I mentioned LSU's receiving core in that list of guys, but obviously LSU is in that conversation, if not at the top of the conversation. But Alabama has the guys, likely. Georgia has guys who can be the guy sometimes. And I don't know what the difference is when I look at this, because it's, you know, it's a razor thin comparison.
I guess taking all of those data points and now projecting forward into this title game, we did have the game the first time around. We've called it out a couple times now, 41-24 in favor of Alabama. Like I said, I went back, I watched that game to see if we could pick up any trends, anything that might be useful now moving forward. If, I don't know, there are any new observations that could change my mind about picking Alabama in this game. I already mentioned Stetson Bennett. I thought Stetson Bennett, all things considered, played a pretty good game. They couldn't really run the ball. And there are reasons for that. They got down late. They had to stop running the football for sure and start trying to throw it and score it quicker, especially after what went down in the early part of the third quarter when Georgia started, when Alabama started to get a little bit more separation. But I thought Stetson Bennett, for his own part, acquitted himself pretty well.
Did he, though? He threw two back-breaking interceptions.
I know. One, he was fooled on coverage. The other was sort of under duress, running away and throwing off a short leg. So it, you know,
it's a bad decision.
Bad decisions. He needs to improve those. Neither one helped. Both were costly for sure. But I think by and large, with what he was asked to do, I thought he did an okay job. Let's put it this way. He definitely looked better this time around against Alabama than what we saw in 2020.
Yeah, I'd say that's true. But I'd still point, I don't think he played a good game against Alabama. Like, he made good plays, winning plays. But, you know, when the margins are that thin, and you throw two interceptions
that
ultimately swing the game. You didn't play a good game. So the yardage is great. Yeah.
I will disagree to this extent. All right. He needs to get better for sure. I'm with you on that front. I do think he has improved since the last time, like, we saw him against Bama from 2020 to 2021. It was a much more confident, a better quarterback. And there were plenty of times in this game, the first time around, where he made big throws, where he was putting balls high and away from defenders, where only Brock Bowers, where only his guys could catch it. He was willing to make those throws. And when he had time to make those throws, he was pretty good. The two exceptions, the first one, when he was rushed out of the pocket into his right and he threw into traffic, it was a bad decision. He was trying to make a play out of nothing. The second, he had time and he was fooled by coverage. Thought a safety was dropping, the safety came up. With the exception of those two plays, I thought Stetson Bennett did a really good job. I'm curious to see what they do with him this time around, because much like we saw with, you know, some of Bryce Young in that first game, and even like we saw with some of Stetson Bennett in that Michigan game, he's got some wheels on him. Like,
he's athletic. He can move.
If they could take him out of the pocket and do more designed runs or just, I don't know, find ways to get him on the move, at a minimum, that provides another wrinkle for this Alabama defense to consider. And we didn't really see a whole lot of that the first time around.
So since Alabama lost to Cardale Jones and Ezekiel Elliott in 2014 in that semi, the quarterbacks that they've lost to and that merely they've just faced, I guess if you remove Jake Fromm from the equation, it's Trevor Lawrence, it's Deshaun Watson, it's, you know, Joe Burrow during the regular season. Do you believe that Stetson Bennett can rise to that type of occasion to get that type of performance, like what Trevor Lawrence or Deshaun Watson did, whoever, or obviously Joe Burrow did in that shootout regular season win? And do you believe that Georgia can beat Alabama with a non-disastrous, pseudo-pedestrian effort from Stetson Bennett? So he's not throwing the two back-breaking picks, but he's also not a huge asset and is the reason why. You know, he's not bombing downfield. He's not scrambling on third and 11 for 14 yards, that he's merely fine. Do you believe a merely fine performance coupled with an otherworldly defense is good enough to beat this Bama team, or does he need to rise to an exceptional occasion?
I think he needs to rise.
Okay.
I don't think you can get away with a 222-yard, one touchdown, no interception, workmanlike effort here.
Right.
Because if you're going to beat Bama, they're going to score. I don't care how good this defense is. In order to beat Bama, you got to score 31, 35 points.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And so, in the absence of a running game, perhaps against this Alabama defense, he's going to be asked to throw it. And he's going to need to turn in a performance where he gets like 350 yards passing and doesn't throw the backbreaking pick like he did in the third quarter or fourth quarter, I guess, of the first time around in the SEC title game.
That's reasonable. I think I tend to agree that with how much preparation goes into Alabama's defense and even with Alabama's injured corners, I think there has to be some level of, if Georgia's going to win this game, it's because they're ticking the offensive boxes. I'm not worried about the Georgia defense, especially, even with what they were able to do or not do against Alabama the first time. I think there needs to be at least 4.5 killer plays downfield. I'm not talking 83-yard touchdowns. I'm saying 3rd and 8 goes for 27, that kind of thing. I don't think you can sort of just, well, I'm going to play within myself and not make mistakes. I don't see that working. I just don't. And I don't think Georgia does either. I think they're prepared to take those shots and to empty the playbook. I just, man, easier said than done when Will Anderson is staring at you hungry.
Well, and that was a key difference the first time these teams played, because Alabama, if you look through what they did, was very good at getting those big chunk plays. In the early part of the game, they had a bunch of them, but they found different ways to get Jameson Williams involved, right? Mm-hmm. Initially, there was a 64, 66-yard touchdown pass where he caught the ball around midfield and just burned everybody.
Yeah, totally.
They got him in space. There was another play later in the game where they threw a screen pass to him and just let him run. That's one thing we could see more of. If John Mechie's not out there.
Well, he's not going to be out there. Mechie will not be out there.
Right.
Yeah.
If they still want to find a way to get him the ball, do more of those screen type plays. Yeah. See what he can do after the catch. He's very good. There were other instances in this game where they just hit him on a bomb, like 55 yards down the field, sideline, he's open. Put the ball in the spot it needed to be. He catches it. Big gainer for Alabama. You didn't have a whole lot of that for Georgia, right? That big play ability against this Alabama defense was sorely lacking. There were moments, but it was sorely lacking, and they're going to need to try and find some way to get that pop.
Teams were able to do that against Alabama this year. Arkansas was able to do that. Tennessee was able to do that. This is not an impossible Alabama defense. And while, you know, LSU and Auburn weren't necessarily doing that, teams were able to complete passes downfield and score points against this Alabama defense this year. It's not an impossible task. A&M, obviously, especially near the end of that game, that incredible throw from, what I think it was Zach Calzada to Anaya Smith, I want to say. So in big moments, this Alabama defense, Will Anderson's there, they can be had. I don't know if it's happening for four quarters. It probably isn't. But this is not impossible. This is not an impossible task that KJ Jefferson and Hendon Hooker and even Zach Calzada were not able to do. It's realistic to say Georgia needs to be able to, and Georgia should be making plays downfield.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So the two factors for me, I think, as we start looking forward now into this game, the first is certainly around that Georgia receiving core, their pass catchers. It seems pretty obvious to me after watching that Alabama game about a month ago that the Alabama secondary was instructed to just play very tight. And if you need to deal with a pass interference call, that's fine. But just don't get burnt.
Correct.
And I think they could probably do that again. My hunch is that you tell your defense to do that if you don't feel like your opponent has the athletes out wide to burn you deep. And if you can play that game effectively the way Alabama did, it means that you don't have to overcommit to either the run or the pass. You can just sort of do your thing. You can get away with it. The same calculus doesn't really apply on the Georgia side, right? Because their pass rush couldn't get home. And because Bama does have those guys out wide, because they didn't sack Bryce Young at all, he just found ways to create time for himself. Even when there was a pass rush, he was able to dance around and let Jameson Williams, let whoever get open, make the big throw downfield. And there's really no way to stop that. Unless you can find some way to generate that pressure, putting the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback in a position where he's got time to pick his spots is a losing proposition.
Well, that's the thing. If you're Georgia, by the way, you can do every single thing right in coverage and on the pass rush and collapsing the pocket. And it sometimes doesn't matter because Bryce Young is that good at eluding and avoiding.
Exactly. And so even if you devote more resources to the passing game, it still doesn't account for Bryce Young. Or if you stack the box and try to stop some kind of rushing attack, be it from Brian Robinson or even Bryce Young, then suddenly you've got Jameson Williams who can beat you over the top. Alabama didn't really have to make that choice, but Georgia does. I wonder if Mechie being out at all affects the equation there, but I still don't have a really good answer for Bryce Young from the Georgia side, which is why I think I favor Alabama. I don't know how they solve that equation. It might be closer. Maybe they learned something the first time around, and it is tough to beat a team twice in the same season. But I still don't have a great answer for how Georgia is now suddenly going to be able to stop Bryce Young.
Is Bill O'Brien an asset or liability? I think obviously he's an asset, but is Bill O'Brien in this spot for the first time as a first-year coordinator a question, an issue, a nitpicking subject worth talking about, as I'm sure Alabama folks have talked about all year long, that especially in, you know, coming out of the first half, like coming out of, you know, what the game plan is with these slow starts, or more often having slow starts than we're used to seeing. Is Bill O'Brien any bit of a concern to you in this specific game?
I don't think so, because you're right.
He's a concern to Bama fans.
He's a concern to Bama fans. I get it.
Yeah.
And for sure, in that SEC title game, Bama punted their first two possessions. Mm-hmm. They scored on their next four possessions.
It's good stretch.
Right. And they went in at halftime up 24-7. Things got out of hand in the third quarter and the game was over before you knew it. So even if there are slow starts, and even if there is some question about what he's going to do on a big stage like this against a really good defense, he answered that question the first time around. He was very effective putting Bryce Young into the right spots where he could succeed, getting guys like Jameson Williams the ball, and really putting his foot on the gas even once John Mechie went down. And secondly, I just, again, come back to the fact that I don't know what's changed since that game. There's not really been anything that's changed so much that it would affect my opinion of certainly what the Alabama offense could do.
Well, one, John Mechie's not playing. Two, we saw what Alabama's strategy was against the Cincinnati team and the way that they run the ball, unlike game plans and strategies that we've seen from Bama earlier this season. And three, we now know how Bill O'Brien views the Georgia defense in terms of strategizing. Like, Georgia has tape on Alabama and what they've game planned for and how they adjust to what Georgia adjusts to. That's why everybody says, you know, no matter the sport, you know, basketball, if a team loses, you know, in the conference championship game and then they play them in the NCAA tournament, it's tough to beat a team twice because the book is out. I tried to make that case with Utah and Oregon.
Didn't work out super well. Yeah.
But I would argue Georgia's defense is far ahead of what Oregon's and Georgia's quarterback situation is far ahead. So that's what's changed is Georgia has data on what Alabama wants to do, tries to do, adjusts along the way against the Dogs. That's the difference to me, is that it was kind of a mystery, specifically, you know, the chess match. And now there is at least, okay, when we did this, this is how they tried to counter. When we didn't do this, this is what they did. That to me has what's changed.
I think that's big time overthink express.
Oh, it for sure is. That's why we're here, Ty.
I think it's big time overthink express. I think the easiest point to make is really the same. I'm glad you brought up the Oregon-Utah game, not to rub salt in the wound.
No, it's okay. Go for it.
But the first time around, we saw Utah win in dominant fashion. They played again in the Pac-12 championship game. Right. And we had the same question then. What's changed? What's changed, man? What's different now? I don't know if either one of us saw much of anything. You tried to make the case, but you still had the same question. What's changed? Even though we tried to find it, the ultimate answer was nothing. Nothing changed. Oregon got blown out a second time. And so I do think this game will be closer.
Okay.
I think it'll be closer. I do think that Georgia is talented enough. They've got smart enough guys running the team. Like, they'll find ways that they could further optimize and give themselves a better chance. I still can't bridge the gap fully because I have not figured out a way for them to neutralize Bryce Young.
So do you think now that I think we're more impressed, I don't want to speak for you, but I'm more impressed with what Georgia did to Michigan than what I am with Alabama and what they did to Cincinnati. Do you think Georgia's body of work, including the loss to Alabama, is more impressive than Alabama's body of work?
It's hard to say.
I kind of do.
They're different. They're so
different. They're sure different.
Why do you feel that way?
Georgia did something historically well in a way that Alabama did not, and that's play defense. Georgia left no doubt all season long. Usually we're due for a team, and we talked about this late in the season, we're due for a team, as great a team is, like, okay, they are beating everybody by 30, they're due to beat an average team by 10. Right. You know, that they're going to have a down week, that it's impossible to run the table in that fashion. Georgia didn't have that issue. And that's, to me, more impressive than Alabama with the obviously Texas A&M loss and the struggles against LSU, even Arkansas and Auburn at the end of the year. Like, these are not like Arkansas is a really good team to me, but LSU and Auburn were clearly flawed teams that Alabama struggled with. So to me, even with the loss, like, I consider right now Alabama to be a better team than Georgia because they recently played head to head. But body of work,
yeah,
every single thing that you can nitpick, I think what Georgia's done since late August is more impressive.
Well,
I don't know how that yes, no, maybe.
The post-game win expectancy number is always something that's, I think, really interesting to look at. It gives you some sure indication of how well did a team play. Even if they won or even if they lost, how mm-hmm well did they play? What you see with Georgia outside of that very first game against Clemson and then the last game, the SEC title game, I haven't seen the Michigan one yet, but I know pretty much where that one's going to land.
Right.
Every post-game win expectancy between the start and finish of the year was 100%.
Yes.
Which is almost something you never see. Even Alabama. Right. Alabama's got a couple hundreds in there, but there's an 89, there's a 96, yeah, there's a 53. Every team has an off game here and there.
Mm-hmm.
To your point, Georgia did not really have those for the vast majority of the season, not until that right SEC title game. And so, yeah, I guess at least as far as that goes, the defense was so good that it created so much opportunity for the offense, and they just worked really, really well together. They didn't take weeks off, you know.
You're right. You're absolutely, I mean, I totally agree, right? The point stands that what Georgia did was more dominant than any team in the country. And so it's correctable issues against Alabama. It's the back-breaking picks. It's keeping things going, right? But it's not necessarily in Georgia's DNA. They're not an air raid team. They're not a downfield all the time type team. They are very choosy with how they attack. And it was an overwhelming success because they're making the best of what they have. And the best of what they have is pretty incredible. So it's nitpicking. Is there a coach? Is there a situation like in the way that I brought up Bill O'Brien with Georgia? Like, is Dan Lanning too much of a distraction that he's calling the defense and also, you know, recruiting and assembling a staff for Oregon? Is it Todd Monken? Is it Kirby Smart and in-game decision making? Is there a criticism you have sideline or booth with Georgia?
I mean, talk about overthink express, right?
Yeah, of course it is.
it's very difficult to find something really to hang your hat on. I guess my only criticism, and it's pretty specific to this matchup, would be getting pressure on Bryce Young. And what right can they do the second time around to fix that problem? I don't know ultimately if it's something you can cure. I do think it can be better this time around because even though they didn't sack him in that first game, there were a lot of instances where the blitzes were late getting in. Like, I don't know okay if they weren't ready for the speed of Alabama or the size of the offensive line or what, but there were plenty of instances where they were just like a tick off, a tick too slow. And so to some extent, I think that's something they can make better this time
sure
around. I do think the benefit of film from that first game will make them better defensively and will hopefully, for their sake, put Bryce Young in different situations. I just don't think you can fully neutralize the guy. There's a reason he won the Heisman. Ultimately, for this to have a different result, you need to take Bryce Young completely out of his game. You need to get him to make some mistakes, and you need to find a way to keep him from running for like 40 or 50 yards on you. I don't see an easy way for Georgia to do that. That's less of a criticism and more of a matchup disadvantage.
Yeah, and Michigan was able to go downfield a bit on this Georgia defense, which is worrisome with Bryce Young. And the Georgia corners were a concern early on, and if there is a weakness on that defense, which does not align well and came to fruition in the SEC championship game with Bryce Young throwing the way that he did. Can I flip it on the other side?
Please.
Can I say Alabama has another Heisman caliber player in Will Anderson? The Heisman caliber rush end edge rusher that Michigan arrived to the Orange Bowl with was fully neutralized by the right side of Georgia's offensive line, which was beat up and got healthier. Can that happen 2 weeks in a row? Can Georgia's offensive line stymie both Aiden Hutchinson and Will Anderson? Is that necessary? If Will Anderson is about what he's been all year, which has been dominant, is that a huge, huge issue? Or do you just take those lumps and move on?
Is it an issue for Alabama if Will Anderson can't do Will Anderson things, if he gets Hutchinson'd against the...
I think it's a huge issue.
Yeah, I think so too, because...
Big ask.
It's a big ask. Big ask. It may be an impossibility. Stetson Bennett was only sacked like 3 times by that Alabama defense the first time around. But there were plenty of instances where, again, they moved him out of the pocket. They made him uncomfortable. They upset his timing. And Will Anderson had a big part to play in that. Mm-hmm. So I do think they need him to be Will Anderson. They need him to help, I guess, alter that passing attack from Georgia, because if that passing game is there and if Stetson Bennett has a chance to sit back there and pick out his spots, if he's not under duress, to the point from earlier, I think he could be really good. I think there were moments in the first game where he was really good.
There definitely were.
You need to try and put him in a situation to make some of those mistakes, because the two that he made were very costly. And that was the case when they played last year too. So they want to try and put him in those situations where he's doing dumb stuff with the football. If Will Anderson's not there to be his normal dominant presence, then yeah, that's an issue.
Do you want to get into overthink and underthink picks?
This is our DraftKings game of the week, of course, presented by our good friends over at DraftKings Sportsbook. All right.
If you are to sketch out who wins and why from an overthinking perspective, if you are using your galaxy brain to say, okay, these are the dots I'm connecting, this is why I think this or that, and this is why I'm picking this team, why and who? Or who and why?
Yeah, if I am, I guess, overthinking it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm trying to put on my galaxy brain hat and figure out, okay, what exactly is going to happen here? I think it's a lower scoring game. I think there will be more emphasis on the Bama ground game and screen passes, because, you know, we saw a little bit of that last week, but John Metchie's not out there this time around. And they still want to try and figure out a way to get their best playmakers the ball in space. And so I think the way you do that is with maybe more emphasis on the ground game, or maybe more of those screen passes, just get Jameson Williams the ball. Maybe put him back there as the quarterback and just let him freaking run. Like, whatever. He's your best player outside of Bryce Young. So I want to see if they can do more of that. I expect that we will see a little bit more of that. Again, one way that they can get those guys the ball with John Metchie not being out there. I am also curious to see what version of that we get from the Georgia side of things as well. Like, they had some success early throwing down the field against Alabama, but they also had some success with some of those short type of passes. Ladd McConkey had a touchdown where they threw it to him in the slot on a screen pass and he just scampered for however many yards. The key for them is maybe they don't have the downfield threats, but they do have guys that if you get them the ball in space, they're very good. Like, even James Cook, right? He wasn't much of a receiving threat this year, but James Cook, we saw what he did against Michigan. He can be, obviously, a game-changing type of player.
Oh, yeah. Saw it against Georgia last year, or saw it for Georgia last year against Alabama, yeah.
Yeah, like, how do they get those guys the ball? If I'm really overthinking it, and if I'm trying to be a coach, which I'm not, and nobody should be taking this all that seriously, but if I'm overthinking it, if I'm trying to put the game plan together, I'm saying, first prediction, we're going to see more of those shorter-type throws, getting guys the ball in space, seeing what they can do after the catch. That's my first prediction. How about you?
My overthink express is Georgia, is coming down to the fact that they've played, the fact that Georgia knows what to correct, perhaps more so than what Alabama knows what to correct in this specific matchup. The fact that I am expecting timely bombs from this Georgia offense to be
timely
a real thing.
Timely bombs.
Okay. The fact that N'Kobe Dean plays for Georgia and doesn't play for Alabama and can affect the game, I think, in more ways at his best than what Will Anderson can do, just because of, I don't know if I think N'Kobe Dean's better at playing linebacker than Will Anderson is at playing edge rusher, but because of what he can do against the run and the pass. And we've seen him, lined up out wide and, you know, force a pick six or whatever, score on a pick six. There is just an element of what Georgia can do on defense is better than anything that anybody can do in the country when they are at their best. That, to me, coupled with the experience, coupled with what they did against Michigan, coupled with, look, the Braves just won the World Series. Maybe it's just a great time to be in Georgia, okay? All of those things together say this has been an era of breakthroughs in college football. If I'm overthinking it, right? Mm. LSU breaks through on offense. Georgia has broken through as a number one team and looked like the best team in the country for basically all season long. Like Michigan broke through against Ohio State. Like there just has been that in the air within the sport. So if I'm taking this sort of universe and ethereal perspective, coupled with the Georgia defense, coupled with Stetson Bennett and the disrespect that he has gotten from his own fan base that's been clamoring. Now, I'm not going to paint everybody with a single brush, but the disrespect of people clamoring for JT Daniels after a sensational year from Stetson Bennett. I think there is poetry in the college football ether that is on the side of the Georgia Bulldogs. That, to me, is my overthinking this pick for Georgia.
What's your underthinking?
Bama plus three as a dog with the Heisman winning quarterback. If I'm going to underthink this game, Alabama's been here more often. Alabama has prepped its players. Nick Saban has prepped his players more often for this game. They have the better quarterback. They have the better number one receiver. They have the best edge rusher in college football. And to me, that's enough.
Yeah.
That is enough to win a game against literally anybody, even as the fifth worst iteration or the worst iteration, whatever, of Alabama over the past 5-6 years. That to me is the underthink. Like, it's Bama plus points in the national championship with the Heisman winning quarterback. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, and look, nothing's changed is the underthink point of the day for me. What's changed? This was a runaway train the first time around. And it was close for a half. It was good for a half, but Alabama, after going down 10-0, sort of started to shut down that Georgia offense. And Georgia wasn't completely shut down, but Alabama changed its approach a little bit. And as their offense was coming into its own, the defense was forcing punts, forcing turnovers, especially in the second half when they started to get some separation against Stetson Bennett in Georgia. So from my standpoint, again, What's changed is that maybe John Metchie's out. Maybe Bama's dealing with some issues in its secondary. Both teams have tape. But as long as Bama still has Bryce Young, and as long as they still have Jameson Williams and Will Anderson, I'm not sure I feel like anything has really swung so much that it's going to change my opinion. So underthink expressed to me is that it's closer, but that because Bryce Young is still out there and there isn't really an easy solution to stop him, 34-27, Alabama wins, and they hit the over.
Is that your complete pick? Are you looking, which side of your shoulder, which shoulder? Are you looking to the overthink or underthink shoulder at this point?
Underthink.
So you're going underthink. Ty, I'm going to be a romantic. I use the word poetry perhaps twice, three times too many. I am going with Georgia here.
Wow.
I'm going with Georgia. And there is, I don't think, an appreciable discrepancy in talent on either side.
There isn't.
But I'm going to say the Georgia defense, the Stetson Bennett story, and maybe I'm a sucker. Maybe I'm easily seduced by overthinking. But I don't care about being right. I care about being me. And me says, Georgia. I am now invested in this Georgia outcome because I'm an Oregon fan and the defensive coordinator is taking over in Eugene. I'm going with defense and poetry and the universe, Ty. Let's ride.
If Dan Lanning shuts down Bryce Young, we're going to have to send a neighbor over to check on you because you will be enthralled with the next chapter of Oregon football if they can play defense to that extent.
If Dan Lanning shuts down, I mean, Dan Lanning and the Georgia defense shut down Bryce Young and win this game demonstrably, you're going to need to send the Polar Express. You're going to need to send, if we're keeping this on train, you're going to need to send the fire department with an icy, icy fire hose to water me down.
And Pat Monahan while we're at it. I mean, just
you're going to send
all the trains.
Pat Monahan. I am going to be tingling in an uncomfortable way if that's what happens here. Now, I just want good football. I just want entertaining TV. I don't actually have an investment in this game, but I am leaning overthink because that is who I am. It can only be me.
Well, before we close out the DraftKings segment here, three other points of overthinking that I just want to put out there into the college football universe. Prop bets. Prop bets are a thing whenever you get to the national championship. Now, we're recording this early. I have not seen these numbers yet, but I do know that they were available on DraftKings shortly before the playoff games. You had some of these player props. Three in particular that I'd look at. First and foremost, whatever the over-under is for Stetson Bennett rushing yards, I think in order for them to win, in order for them to be better on offense, they're going to have to get him in space. He can run. He's really freaking quick. And I think he's shown a willingness to do so. I want to see if they can get him more in space against this Alabama defense. Just give him something to think about. So I'd be inclined to go over on his yardage. I don't know what the number is yet, but just give it some thought over the course of the next week or so. Two other ones. I mentioned this on the stream that we did before the Alabama-Cincy game, but a touchdown for either Cameron Latu or Jahleel Billingsley.
I think that's a good call. Yeah.
For Alabama, because we've seen them in these situations. And I think especially the case now, Latu had a touchdown, by the way, against Cincinnati.
Latu,
but,
yeah,
you know, there's like a long storied history of Alabama in these big games going OJ Howard out of nowhere, right? Like they find ways to get other guys involved that maybe aren't as noticeable on tape throughout the course of the season. And I think this could be a scenario again without Mechie, their top target this year. They might look and get creative with who else they can involve in the offense.
Georgia has a kicking advantage as well, do they
not?
Big
time. Big time kicking advantage.
Okay.
The final bet is over on Jameson Williams receiving yards.
Okay.
And I don't care, frankly, what the number is. I just think they're going to find ways to get him involved. And not only is he good as a downfield threat, but he's also really good even if you just throw him those short screens over the middle and let him run for 55 yards.
Yep.
I think he's going to be the focal point. He'll remain the focal point. And they probably, for my money, can't set this line high enough. He's just going to finish with 150 plus yards, and they won't make that line that high. So I'd be inclined to go over.
Yeah, I think it's a wild line. Whatever it ends up being, like that's going to be a wild ride because Bama definitely had that dude in Devontae Smith that like everybody knows he's getting the ball. And when he gets the ball, there's nothing you can do. I think Jameson Williams is excellent. I don't think he's that. And I think as the more focal point of this passing game. Now, maybe, you know, we'll see more Ja'Cory Brooks and Slade Bolden, whatever. But, man, that's going to be a ride to me. And it might hit.
It might
be a ride.
It might hit.
Yeah.
All right. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the promo code SOLID. You bet just $5 on any college football team, and you win $200 in free bets if they are victorious. That's promo code SOLID. To bet on college football at DraftKings Sportsbook. You got to be 21 or older in New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania. New customers only, minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Dan.
So I have. Yep.
Are you excited for the rematch?
I am extremely excited for Yeah, I'm excited to watch this game. I really like to have a newer matchup. You know, I like to have the like LSU Clemson in this game. We're just like, oh man, this is going to be fun. This is going to be weird. And even Ohio State Alabama last year, I was like, okay, Justin Fields is beat up as you are. We're getting, you know, Mac Jones. Like I'm excited. I'm extremely excited, but the tank isn't full, Ty. Okay. I'm like at an 89.7, and I wish I were at a 96.2.
Well, look, it's been a long college football season.
Yes.
We made it through mostly unscathed. We had a couple games postponed or canceled, especially in bowl season. But
I'll probably make some pizza, though, so I'm excited for that. Yeah.
Yeah, but as compared to what we saw in 2020, definitely a quantum leap forward, much more normalcy in the college football world. Mm-hmm. And I think we're both grateful for that. We're grateful for all the college football fans who listened throughout the course of the 2021-22 season. And we still got a couple games left to play here. There's the LSU-Kansas State game that's going to take place, I guess, after we record. And then, of course, the college football playoff national championship. What is your final score prediction, Dan?
34-31 Georgia. Oh, that pushes, right? So if you're giving 2.5, it wins and it pushes. So I'll say 34-30 because I don't want to be a fence sitting pig. How about that?
34-30. I've got 34-27. In both cases, we've got the over 52. Enjoy the game, one and all, for that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrandt. We'll talk to y'all soon. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace to the jacuzzi.